Well, there's a bunch of them. They're wearing white hoods and white masks, and they're scaring the hell out of Democrats. Hi, everybody. I'm Bill Whittle here with your Right Angle, which is brought to you in cooperation with the Patriot Post. We're doing a little cross promotion with our friends over there at the Patriot Post. You follow that link down below. It'll take you right over to their website where they do some of the finest writing in the entire conservative spectrum. And we know you'd like to check them out. Anyway, so here's the deal, folks. I'm looking at a picture of a group of people in white robes with masks on. They are scaring the hell out of Democrats, only it's not the Ku Klux Klan. It turns out that this gigantic pile of garbage that has been sitting in my hometown of L.A., breeding the occasional outbreak of bubonic plague or typhoid fever, you know, that kind of thing you'd see in any large American city in 2019. Well, this giant pile of garbage sat there, and things got worse and worse and worse. Plague was reported, nothing happened. Typhoid was reported, nothing happened. And then something happened. An American hero happened. A conservative happened. It's almost unbelievable, really. But a guy named Scott Pressler came in to downtown Los Angeles with 200 volunteers in hazmat suits with masks fully sealed because there is bubonic plague in L.A. And in the course of a couple of hours, these 200 volunteers led by this American hero cleaned up this entire mess, carted it away, problem solved. And for this, the New York Times responded with a 14-page spread on something else because they didn't even mention that it had happened. I imagine that the reason that this press coverage was not forthcoming was that the left-leaning, democratically controlled LA Times might be just a tiny bit embarrassed that the left-leaning, democratically controlled city of Los Angeles and the left-leaning, democratically controlled state of California has watched this situation get worse and worse and worse, said nothing can be done about it unless we get more money. And then a conservative comes in from Virginia, makes a couple phone calls, problem solved, total cost to the American taxpayer, zero.
Well, first, I'm going to quibble with your description of the LA Times as being left-leaning. If you were to cut off my my left leg, my left arm, my left ear, poke out my left eye, and remove all the teeth from the left side of my mouth, and then prop me on a board facing, south, I suppose, I might be as left-leaning as the Los Angeles Times. No, there's
sounds like the kind of thing I'd want to test experimentally, but go ahead.
So there is that. In fact, I think the only thing we didn't do was shave off my left nostril, but that would just involve way too much work. Anyway, one of my favorite books on American pop culture came out, it must be 15 years ago now or more. It's called Gilligan Unbound, and I can't remember the author's name, but he talks about Gilligan's Island and other American kind of fluff pop culture, but how it's sort of in an underground, underhanded way, almost a sly way, reflects the greatest parts of American culture. And in the chapter, I think it was on Gilligan's Island, he talks about how the show reveals through, 7 characters, I guess, that cover a wide spectrum of American life, this sort of American genius for self-organization.
Yep.
You can take 7 Americans. One's kind of dumb. One's a small businessman. There's a wealthy couple. There's a scientist. There's an actress. There's a small town girl, right? You got this spectrum of American culture. Plop them down on a desert island, and they will, just through self-organization, that particularly American genius, form a miniature American society without the government, without a written constitution, without anything else. Just we bring our Americanness with us. And this is an example of that. What's the gentleman's name again?
Scott Pressler.
Scott Pressler. His name should be known to every American far and
it
wide.
It should indeed.
Because he represents this American genius for self-organization. The city government didn't do it. The city aldermen or whatever the next layer down in Los Angeles government is, they didn't do it. Nobody did it. This one guy sees a problem, gets 200 volunteers, boom, solves the problem, at least in the short term. And the reason the left is so angry about this and either complaining about it, which I think you're going to get to in Scott's question in Baltimore, or ignoring it in Los Angeles, is if the American genius for self-organization exists mostly now on the right, there is a conceit on the left that no good deed counts unless it's done by the government, with the government's consent, or with the government's aid. If it doesn't have that government imprimatur, then it doesn't count. And that goes completely against the American grain. And I'm glad this gentleman still represents the best in us.
Me too. And by the way, folks, as you can see from this picture, this guy is not exactly what you call a, you know, Bob Dobbs pipe smoking kind of conservative. This guy looks entirely like he would be most likely to be seen on the other team, except, of course, he's wearing an American flag T-shirt. And as we all know, if an American flag should touch the skin of a progressive, it would burst into flames. The progressive, I mean.
Yeah, flag would be fine.
Yep. So here's the thing, Scotty. LA Times insulted this guy by not putting one single line of type about him, but at least they didn't go as far as the Baltimore Sun. Baltimore Sun openly criticized him when he did the exact same thing in Baltimore. Came in, cleaned it up. They basically said, who the hell are you to come in here? They didn't say white boy, but you could kind of get the sense that's really what they were thinking. Who are you to come in here and showboat around and grandstand at our expense? And all you do in exchange for all of this is clean up this mess that's been there for 20 years that we have said is impossible to clean up without billions of dollars. What does that tell you about the motivation of the people who were in government? Because if their motivation was what they said it was, they would be grateful that somebody had solved a public health problem that they claimed to be very, very concerned about. And so why would you get all of this hate if you come in and do it for nothing?
Well, I've had enough experience, and that's not much, but it's enough being involved with local government to see that when private citizens try to do something on behalf of the community or for the greater good of the community without the imprimatur, as Steve was saying, of the local government, then they are seen as a threat. And there are all kinds of reasonable things said about why they should not be able to do this, you know, because of liability and possibility of disease and possibility of, you know, when they're trying to do some other kinds of projects, bad construction practices could make the city liable for what. Anyway, they always have a reason why individual citizens and small groups of citizens cannot come together and make their community a better place. But the thrust of all of it is because it makes us look bad. It makes us look like we can't, meaning the government, can't do what it's supposed to do. And that is, by the way, the same thing that goes with a lot of the workers for government entities are unionized workers. And they have very strict rules about what you can and cannot do. You know, I used to work for public television, and I remember when we did the fundraising breaks, when the camera went dark and they went back to programming and we were done in the studio, you had to wait for the sound guy to come out and take your lavalier microphone off of your tie. You could not do that yourself because the union rules said that it had to be an audio professional who would remove that, which was really funny one day when I was halfway home and realized I still had my microphone on. Completely, including the transmitter clipped to my belt, and I'm driving across, you know, Pennsylvania with this thing. But in any case, it brings to shame and to mockery the people who are supposed to be doing these things. I think one of the most devastating impacts of ever-growing government, ever more involved government in the lives of average Americans is it's stripped us entirely of this sense of civic responsibility. Now, some people watching this may have thought I was going to say rugged individualism. I'm not even saying rugged individualism. I'm saying civic responsibility. I mean, I was raised by a grandfather who, when he lived in an area of Academy Gardens in Philadelphia that was so rapidly growing after World War II, and so many kids were there, and everybody was saying, there's nothing for the kids to do. My grandfather got together with some other neighbors, and they developed an athletic program for Academy Gardens. And then when he moved to Chalfont, Pennsylvania, he got involved with starting a little league football program, the Lenape Valley Indians. And then when we moved further north in Bucks County and there was nothing for the kids to do, he started a baseball team called the Tinicum Tigers. And he was brought in because people have heard of his reputation, where the high school football coach said, hey, we just started a football program here at Palisades High School. We don't have any feeder system because there's no little league system here. We're wondering if you could get together with us and put together a little league football program. And he started the Silver Creek Cardinals along with these other men who did this. This sense of when something needs to be done, it's me. It's us. We are to do it, not to sit around and complain that nobody does anything. And where this really pays off, frankly, and the lack of it costs human lives is in situations like with Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, where people sat around waiting for the government to do something and they died.
Yeah. One of the things that occurs to me quite a bit is that when I was considerably younger, when I was in my early 20s, late teens, early 20s, I was a lot more liberal than I am now. And I passionately believed in things that I knew nothing about. And the less I knew about them, the more strongly I was convinced I was right. This is called the Dunning-Kruger effect. It's an indication that people who have ignorance in an area tend to overestimate their command of the area and rate themselves very highly at being an expert in this kind of thing. I knew nothing about any of this stuff. That's why I was totally sure I was right. So the inverse of that happens is when you get a little wisdom, you start questioning yourself. You start questioning the moral certainty of what you're doing. And I know I'm speaking for Stephen Scott here, that when you are the kind of person who people turn to for opinions and ideas, you have an obligation. You have a moral obligation to make sure, at the very least, you believe you're telling the truth as you see it.
Yeah.
So I constantly question all of my beliefs. I do it all the time. What if they're right? What if they're right? Well, this is another example that goes into the toolbox that says, they ain't right. We're right. We're on the right side of this issue, and we're on the right side of pretty much all of these issues. The fact that an individual citizen could travel the length of the country and at no cost to the taxpayers of this city solve a problem that we were told by – that was insoluble by our political opponents tells me that I'm on the right team. It's not just a question of cleaning up L.A. It's a question of this being an exclamation point that everything we believe is in fact not only our opinion but is in fact a better way to live. Those bubonic plague-ridden rats are not there anymore, and they're not there anymore not because the state of California or the city of LA added another $1 billion to the boondoggle. They're there because an individual citizen on his own time decided to take action and solve a problem. What else do you need to know? What else do you need to know? So Baltimore Sun gave this guy a lot of grief and said, well, you know, why don't you come back here every year if you feel so stressed? So it turns out he does. Turns out he does. And Scott Pressler, I haven't met you, but you are not just a personal hero. You're an American hero. You are an absolute example of what America is all about. And it's not a question of you being on my team or their team politically. You're on my team because I live in Los Angeles and I don't particularly want to be affected by the bubonic plague. That's why we're on the same team here. So as a person who lives in Los Angeles, thank you. And as a conservative, thank you more for showing us that this model of people, this model of behavior, and this model of government is in every way superior to the one that we try to fight every single day. By the way, if you are interested in more of these kind of comments, you can visit our friends over at the Patriot Post. We're doing kind of a cross-promotion thing. I think very highly of them. I think their meme section is out of this world. You find all kinds of great written articles over there. They're sending some of their readers over here to see the world's greatest political videos, and it works out well for both of us. So be sure to follow the link down at the bottom of this description. For Steve Green and Scott Ott, I'm Bill Whittle. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.